Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Whether you're tuning in through Conversations Radio Network, we welcome you. Those joining us on the radio dial in my home state of Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we're glad you all could tune in with us today. As well as joining us on the East Coast in Atlanta at 106 Live, we're glad to have all of you with us as well. Author Kevin Smokler is making his first appearance on our program today to talk to us not only about his new book, Brat Pack America, A Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies, but what it was like for him to kind of go through some of the movies that so many of us know that are still being shown today, ironically, and to be able to think about how they've been able to impact people over the years and also what they said about us as society as well. If you're just still hearing about Kevin's new book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Kevin, hello to you and welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Cyrus. It's great to be here. I really appreciate you having me on.
Oh, the pleasure's definitely on mine. You know, I was telling you before we went on here, you know, someone who graduated in 94, a lot of these movies were on my radar, you know, years ago, even though I didn't necessarily watch a lot of them because I didn't watch a whole lot of movies. But what is so great is that now here in 2016, as I was saying to you before we went on, you know, a lot of these movies are now, of course, being replayed on you know, on the cable channels, so people are able to be able to watch them there. What has it been like for you to not only take us back to some of these great movies, Kevin, but also the stories behind them as well?
Oh, Cyrus, it's just been so much fun to not only talk about these movies with people who saw them the first time around and fell in love with them the same way I did, but really to talk to people who are in your situation, too. I mean, I fully accept that there was a whole swath of people who were in high school at this time or afterward who simply had other priorities than me, you know, staying home on Saturday night and watching movies three and four at a time. And it's been great to talk to people who were busy doing other things at this time or who were simply not big movie lovers when they were teenagers. And to hear them say, right. God, this book really has given me sort of a list of what I can put on my Netflix queue or set up the DVR for the next time these things are on cable. And I'm a big believer that books should stir both, you know, the heart and the head. And if the book has practical, serviceable suggestions for how to improve your life as a movie lover, then that makes me all kinds of happy.
And, Kevin, I should say, I mean, if your name sounds familiar to other people out there, exactly what you just shared is why so many people, I think, were looking forward to this book, because you have made a point of talking about the importance of looking backwards and looking at, you know, maybe some of, you know, like when, in your previous work, a book that maybe we may have read in school, but now may have different significance for us. I know for me, you know, Fahrenheit 451 was one of those books for me that I read in school that now reading it today, it's, you know, it's so interesting to be able to look at being from Mississippi, A Time to Kill, reading that in school and now reading it today. I mean, did you always realize that looking backwards and being able to reflect on things that maybe, you know, didn't seem as significant at the time has been one of the things that's kind of inspired you today?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been of the mind that if you love something, you love it completely with both arms outstretched. And so when I fell in love with movies as a young person and someone told me, oh, movies have been around for 100 years, I was like, oh, my God, really? I have like 100 years I can go back to and start and just wolf it all in with both hands. I'm not stuck, you know, with just the stuff that came out last week. Like, what if I don't like the stuff that came out last week or I'm not interested in that? You mean I can get all of it? Like, that was amazing to me, and I feel that way. I have an enormous appetite for not only books, but also for not only movies, but also books and music and art and all of the different cultural treats out there. So as far as I'm concerned, going back in a really basic way to me is just feeding my enormous appetite. But even bigger than that, it's like I don't want to miss anything. You know, I don't want to. This actor, this filmmaker was inspired by someone who came before and someone who came before, and when Denzel Washington wins the Oscar for Training Day, he says, oh, I've been chasing Sidney Poitier my whole life. Like, do I want to be the dope who doesn't know who Sidney Poitier is and who hasn't seen, you know, and who hasn't seen To Sir With Love or In the Heat of the Night or any of those? No. No, those are movies. Those are great movies, which means that they're on the buffet as far as I'm concerned. You know, open up because I'm shoveling them in.
Right. And then the other thing that you've been able to do that, of course, for me was probably one of the big highlights for me, to be honest with you, of the book, Kevin, is the interviews. because I love being able to kind of pick people's brains and to be able to find out, okay, well, what was this like for you? And can you imagine, you know, that this particular thing now is, you know, is as popular as it is? You know, the interview you did with Martha Coolidge was one of my favorites, as well as the one you did with Steve Holland. What was that like for you to have these individuals kind of open up to you, not only about their own surprises about the new life that a lot of their projects got, but also the stories behind those stories?
Yeah, oh, God, it was such a special thing. You know, Savage Steve Holland, who, of course, made Better Off Dead, which is one of those movies that's, you know, on its face so hilariously funny, but it's also really odd. So I was eager to talk to him and say, good God, man, like, how did you – that movie has more jokes in 90 minutes than some television series have in a whole season. And I just wanted to know, like, how did you come up with this idea that, like, there would be a whole scene with a singing claymation hamburger in it? And you know, and the and two guys who, like, two guys who were both clearly Asian American but talked like Howard Cosell. Like, where does that come from? And so it was fascinating to hear where all of these really funny yet really weird jokes came from when I talked to Savage Steve Holland. And Martha Coolidge and Amy Heckerling, the directors of Valley Girl and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and Miss Heckerling later directed Clueless. Just to hear them talk about how these movies were made and how, you know, movies are a ton of moving parts, and to hear how with each successive part, you know, this actor was cast and the screenplay came from here, and we decided to film this scene, which you know so well here. Just to see it all come together was like listening to a magician talk about how they performed the trick. I mean, it was amazing to get that behind the scenes look. It wasn't one of the full interviews in the book, but I also talked to Christopher Reed, a.k.a. Kid from Kid and Play, about House Party, which is one of my favorite movies from this time. And his interview was a smaller part of the chapter that House Party was in. And I knew, like, House Party was a movie that was it was the Hudlin brothers' first film, but it was an enormous financial success, and it's a really good-looking movie. So I wanted to know, like, how did you guys, how did you guys, these two brothers and this sort of group of actors, how did they get together under these, like, when everybody was really new to the game, and make this movie that seems so polished and professional and fun? Like, it was really like it was like opening your ear up and hearing all the secrets from your favorite movies. It was awesome.
For sure. We're going to talk more about that. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're speaking today with Kevin Smokler. He's the author of the new book, Brat Pack America, A Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies. It's funny that you mentioned House Party. It's one of those movies, I have to say, I didn't watch till I was an adult. Kevin, you know, and again, thanks to Kevin, I was just so far behind. I was really a dork. But, I mean, but it's so funny, though, reading about it in the book, because I thought it's so interesting that perspectives of films definitely vary by the person who is watching it and where that person is. What was that like for you to realize? Because one of the things that you mentioned about that particular film is that, you know, there are some people who, you know, who got it wrong. They, you know, this individual said about, you know, how, where the story was set and what it meant, and how that translated. What was it like for you to kind of hear about that behind the scenes of how people viewed this movie?
It was really cool. Like, House Party is a good example. Like, I was a senior in high school when House Party came out, and I hadn't heard about it, but some other kids in my class had. And I saw a bunch of them talking about it one time. I said, "What are you talking about?" And they said, "This is in the hallway." And my friend Monica goes, "This movie, House Party," and she tells me all about it. And I'm like, "Man, that sounds like fun." But, like, even though this was, you know, '80s, and we kind of all watched, you know, the same TV channels and listen to basically the same radio stations, somehow that one had slipped by. And I can only imagine what it's like when there's twice as many things being listened to. There's so many more ways to listen and to watch things, and a lot of times you're not on the same page as your peers. I think even then that wasn't the case, but I am really surprised by how often I talk to people from different backgrounds and different ages who are at totally different times in their lives as movie lovers, who really have a relationship with these films. I think it just says how great these movies are, that so many different kinds of people have these deep, deep, loving relationships with them.
for sure. So I guess an obvious question would be, Kevin, what was your hope? I mean, as you were able to think about some of these movies, to think about how they made you feel the impact, and then, of course, to look at them now, you know, and how they really have a resurgence, again, thanks to cable and to Netflix, as you mentioned earlier. What was your hope in being able to compile this book?
My hope was that I could first make a case for the fact that these were simply great movies. They weren't just great movies because they were movies from my childhood. That seemed like a rather selfish thing to say, and I wasn't interested in saying that. I just wanted to make a case that they were great movies, one, and two, that they part of the reason is because they had endured. You know, not only were they still easily watchable, but, you know, we've remade Ghostbusters and we've remade The Karate Kid and we're about to remake Splash. And every other day it seems like someone wants to remake The Breakfast Club or House Party or Real Genius or Valley Girl. And it's not because these movies made money. Lots of movies make money that never get remade. It's because people have these incredibly deep, committed, loving memories of them. And also, I just wanted to make the case that these movies that I remember so well could be a lot of fun for people who didn't grow up at the same time I did or under the same circumstances I did. One of my favorite things is to hear from people in your situation, Cyrus, who weren't big movie watchers when they were teenagers and now have an opportunity to be exposed to these great movies. And two, to talk to people who have, like, teenage kids. Who say, you know, I sat my teenager down in front of The Breakfast Club just because I felt like I had to, and now it's their favorite movie. Or I teach seventh grade English, and half of my class's favorite movie is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I mean, that's really, to me, that's saying something. That's saying a lot more than however many Oscars, however many awards, or however much money these movies made. It's just that they aren't stuck in the past. They've in fact stuck around here into the present, and probably will on into the future. And because they're simply so much fun to watch, like that to me, that's just a win all around. What doesn't make you happy about that?
Right, for sure. I think that is so true. There's another thing that I was not expecting from the book, but I have definitely found in my life, and this has been for television and movies, Kevin, and that is, you know, what they leave you with, other than being entertained, how they can inspire you and how they can teach you about what may be possible for yourself. A great example of this is what you share in the book as you're talking about a movie like Back to the Future and what it does tell us and what it doesn't tell us. And I want to just read a bit of it because I think it's an interesting thing and then have you kind of talk a little bit about it. This is what you write when it comes to, you know, to Back to the Future. This is in Chapter 7. We can't rewind. We've gone too far. Back to the Future doesn't tell us how 17-year-old Marty McFly and middle-aged Doc Brown became friends. It does give us the feeling, though, that even though Doc would probably keep inventing with or without Marty, their relationship encouraged him to keep going in spite of whatever past setbacks the movie alludes to. Doc's urge to invent, to see technology bring about tomorrow, seems misunderstood and ignored by conservative, self-destructive Hill Valley, but it's also the glue in the friendship between two of the town's misunderstood residents. I thought that was a powerful thing because that is, and I did watch Back to the Future, right? Even though it was later as well, but I so agree with that it does say so much about how these individuals were so willing to do what, quite frankly, many of us in real life would not do. I mean, a lot of us would look at a problem and say, well, that's not my problem. That has nothing to do with me. And that was definitely not the case with these two. What was it like for you to kind of reflect on a story like that?
I think it was really cool to watch these movies that I had seen many, many times before, and see something like the passage you just read, Cyrus, sort of reveal itself and see some other aspect of the movie. Because on the one hand, it's a great movie is like a great piece of music. Like every time you hear it, you're not just hearing the exact same drum beats and vocal lines, you're hearing something a little bit different. And if it's truly great, it just keeps revealing itself to you over and over again. And not unlike, you know, your best friend or your spouse or someone you have a deep emotional connection to, you keep seeing different sides of them, which to me is just the infinite complexity and wonders of life. You know, that can come from a person and that can also come from a great movie. On the one hand, sometimes you watch one of these movies that you really like, and it's just like you know, eating whipped cream out of the can. You know, it's just comfort food, and it's a lot of fun, and it passes the time, and it lets you forget about the hard things in life for 2 hours. And sometimes it's like eating an incredibly nutritious meal that you weren't expecting, and you're like, oh my God, like I've seen Back to the Future 75 times, and that didn't reveal itself to me. And you feel smarter, and you feel like the movie's that much better for it, and you just feel like you've entered into a whole new phase of your relationship with this movie. My hope is that this book is filled with movies that we can have these continuing, ongoing love affairs with, and that we can see 15 or 20 times if you're so inclined, and each time something else comes out, because to me that's like a movie and a person growing and changing together, and that's like one of the great gifts of life. I hope that's what comes out of spending time with a great movie. That was what I was after anyway.
Yeah, for sure, and I think that definitely comes through. And the other thing that is interesting that I'll talk about that you spent a lot of time in going through that I thought was pretty neat, and that is about the locations of these films. Why did you find that was significant as you were kind of putting this book together?
Well, on the one hand, because this book was about movies from the 1980s, it was the last decade in history before the internet came along, before you could be exposed to the entire world relatively cheaply, and none of us were as firm, at least psychologically and emotionally, none of us were as firmly rooted in one place anymore after you could, at the time, fire up America Online or something and instantaneously visit any point on the globe. On the other, I was really taken by, while these movies were celebrating their anniversaries, their 20th and 25th and now 30th, that celebrations seem to often be held not in movie theaters, but in the places where these movies happened. So Back to the Future had a 25th anniversary screening in the parking lot of the mall in Southern California, where the DeLorean, in fact, goes back to the future. And The Goonies has their celebrations in Astoria, Oregon, where The Goonies was filmed. That's where Goonies Weekend is every year. And Dirty Dancing does a summer weekend, a Dirty Dancing weekend every year at the resort in North Carolina where that movie was filmed. So something about the place itself is special and makes the movie that much more special because of it. And I didn't quite know what that was or understand it, but part of the reason I sort of charged into the book with that in mind was to figure it out.
Yeah, for sure. Have you found that for you, again, in discussing this book, Kevin, that one of the biggest things is that it does take people back and make them kind of look at some of the movies that maybe they have seen in a different way?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, and that's my hope, too. You know, I of course, would be perfectly happy to spend 200 to 300 pages just saying, Bueller, Bueller, or reciting quotes from The Breakfast Club or House Party or Real Genius or Back to the Future or any of these movies, quite frankly. I don't think that would be very interesting. For it would be fun, but not, you sort of don't need me to do that. Ideally, what I wanted was for people to see these things, these movies that they've seen 100 times before or are at least very familiar with and think they've pretty much gotten everything out of, and to uncover something through my research that they haven't. Like, I think there's nothing cooler than thinking you know somebody or something and finding out something else about them. So it was really important to me to take all of these, movies I just named, your Dead Poet Societies and your Dirty Dancings and your 16 Candles and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and to really sift around and do considerable research and find something about them that I didn't think even the most dedicated movie lover knew. And I hope I succeeded.
Yeah. I have to say, out of the movies that we've discussed here briefly and the ones that you feature in the book, the three that really stand out to me that I got a lot from other than being entertained was, I have to say, in the order that they meant the most. Number one would be Dead Poets Society. It's so funny that you mentioned that one, because as someone who's always wanted to write and always wanted to express and not have that supported at home initially, I could so resonate with that book. And of course with the movie as well. And then the second for me was Hairspray. I mean, Hairspray was such a big one for sure. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention it earlier for sure, but the other one also I think is one that a lot of people probably can relate a whole lot to, and that is another one we didn't talk about. That is The Outsiders, and I think there are so many people I think that because of where they see themselves, Kevin, they will then be able to look at those movies and say, wow, that's one of the reasons why, yes, it was an escape. But also to see someone who looks like them or going through something that they're going through, I think definitely makes a big difference. So I mentioned the previous book that you might be known for by some of our audience, Practical Classics. Now you have this book, A Brat Pack America. Are you already looking ahead, Kevin, as to what you would like to explore next?
I have a number of ideas, and the amazing thing about being on book tour and talking about this book, Brat Pack America, folks, is you meet so many interesting people, and your mind, the wheels in your head just start turning. And so I have a number of ideas, and I'm taking a whole lot of notes while I'm on the road and while I'm talking to people like yourself. But right now I'm focused on making sure that as many people as possible who I think would enjoy Brat Pack America and enjoy these movies know about it. And I'll be doing that probably until spring, at which point I think it will be time. I think it will be time to start thinking about what the next project is. My area of interest and expertise is pop culture, so it will be something about music or film or books or television or the visual or performing arts or theater or something like that. But what beyond that, I haven't really had time to think about because I'm focused on this book.
For sure. And definitely for people who have not had a chance to get it, we definitely encourage them to do just that again. It's called Brat Pack America, A Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies. And even, of course, for those who are watching them in 2016, thanks to cable and Netflix, you will appreciate them as well. The author, again, is Kevin Smokler. Kevin, how can our audience stay connected with you and keep up with your schedule and what's coming up next?
Sure. My website is kevinsmokler.com. On Twitter, it's Weege, Weege, and it's just Kevin Smokler on Facebook, too.
All right. So make sure you all are staying connected with Kevin. We've already tagged him on our pages. I'll remind you of that here in a moment. And, Kevin, thank you so much again for the time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Cyrus. Thank you for having me. This was great.
Hey. Yeah, good. Glad to have you on. And we thank you, our audience, for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all did come in late and you missed part of the conversation with Kevin, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media site. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. As I said, I've already tagged Kevin on both places. Just click on that link. The show is podcasted there. You can listen to the show completely for free. You don't have to download anything and even share it with your friends from there as well. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.